I feel like I need to get this out of the way. If you were listening on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or something like that, there's probably an explicit label on this episode. If you are listening through the Patreon podcast feed, my apologies. They don't give me the option to do that. This is my way of letting you know that after a very disappointing loss to the Philadelphia Phillies for the San Diego Padres, there will be foul language in this episode. Please do not listen to it with your small children in the car and blame me later. For anyone who's listening live, same warning to you. Do not expect clean language. If your children hear something, that's definitely not my fault. Let's get to the bullshit. The San Diego Padres lost to the Philadelphia Phillies 10-6. In a lot of ways, I mean, just a lot of ways, it was embarrassing. It was a house of cards collapsing underneath the Padres. There were definitely bright moments, bright spots. We'll go over some of those. There was also some really dark moments. We'll go over some of those, and probably get into conversations that I've seen on Twitter that I feel like are best categorized as off-season conversations. We'll see. Craig Elston will likely not be joining us tonight. He's got a family thing to get to. Tonight was his mother's celebration of life, and then he had a family dinner that he was going to take part in. He might join us at some point, but I don't imagine I'm going to be here very long, because I don't imagine this is a game that many people want to talk about for a very long period of time. I'm really glad that, by the way, if you're here and you're listening live, you can hit the little hand button and join me on stage if you want. And I'm really glad that the first person who did so was a guy who didn't really get the opportunity to do so yesterday. We ran out of time, and I kind of skipped him at the end because I was done with it. But Phil Plantier Slugs is waiting on the line, and now he is up on the stage. So, hey, buddy, go ahead and unmute yourself. How you feeling after yet another shitty-ass Padres loss?
I am not feeling good, of course. Man, that was just rough. You know, in the Discord, I think someone said that was the toughest playoff loss, and definitely the toughest for me since 98, you know, either game three or game four of 98 World Series. You know, it was just, it was brutal. It was freaking brutal. And I mean, I think we all know that Melvin made some errors, whether or not he should be held accountable for those or not. I don't think he should be fired, but you know, just really, really brutal, starting Clevinger and then keeping Manaea in, and just some real brutal stuff going on there. But just, you know, in pain. And I think the mood in the Discord and the mood for me is that the series is over. I mean, I think we'll be playing with house money tomorrow, because in pretty much everyone's mind, the series is over.
Well, you know, I as the series left for Philadelphia, I said several different times, the Padres just have to win one of these games to get back to San Diego, and then I feel good about their chances. I would have felt much, much better about their chances had they won tonight, turned it into a 2-2 series, basically a three-game series with two of those games being played at Petco Park. Instead, the Padres have to win three games in a row to win this series, which I will be very frank with you, I do not think they have the ability to do, despite the fact that the pitchers the next 3 days for them will be Darvish, Snell, and Musgrove, their three best starting pitchers. They're also going up against the three best starting pitchers that the Phillies have to offer. And I'm just throwing this out there. The Phillies have a magic to them. They look something like a team of destiny, a chosen team for this season. They just keep coming through. They're feeding off their fans and their home crowd a lot. Kyle Schwarber, I think, had two home runs tonight. Rhys Hoskins definitely had two home runs tonight. JT Realmuto had a home run tonight. Bryce Harper had two doubles. All of their big hitters that we were talking about heading into the series and saying, luckily, kind of they're all cold except for Bryce Harper. They're all very hot right now. Kyle Schwarber is on fire. Rhys Hoskins is now on fire. JT Realmuto is awake. Bryce Harper remains on fire. Nick Castellanos, I don't remember his at bats, but he went 2-for-4 with an RBI and scored a run. And apparently had a double at some point. You can't beat the Phillies 3 games in a row when those guys are hitting like that. And you're basically facing, you know, 2 of the 15 best pitchers in baseball, 2 of the 20 best pitchers in baseball on their side. Yeah, it's going to be all uphill. I'm trying not to be too sad about it. A couple more people I want to join me up on stage. Hopefully they will perk me up. John Percota, you are always good for a little fact or nugget that makes me feel better about the future. Help me out here.
Yeah, couple of things. I mean, I certainly do not think that the season is over. I think that it's low probability, but it's certainly not over, especially if we are able to pull out that game tomorrow. So 3 games left. Everyone's probably like a 50-50 proposition. That's like, what, 12.5%, something like that, chance of winning all three. We just won 3 against the Dodgers, got home field advantage in 6 and 7. It's at least plausible, even with the little like negative psychological aspect that this game probably played upon our team. The point that I was hoping to make, though, was that baseball is dumb. Dumb stuff happens. Sometimes you just run into a hot team and, you know, they hit a home run in a clutch situation and you lose the game. But it was a little bit deflating to lose this game primarily based on our decision making going into the game. Like, even as soon as Clevinger was announced yesterday on the podcast, you guys were like, oh no, well, hopefully there's like some kind of secondary decision that this is based upon, or like,
you know, maybe what's funny about that? Craig used a very specific phrase yesterday, and I wanted to like cheer him on because I thought it was such a perfect phrase to use when talking about Mike Clevinger. And we were like, you know, someone was like, oh, maybe he'll get used as like an opener type of thing, blah blah blah. And Craig said, Mike Clevinger will stay until he blows the lead, or something like that, until they no longer have the lead. And I remember thinking in my head, like, he's not wrong. Like, even if they build up an early lead, Clevinger will just stay in and slowly or quickly blow that lead, and then they'll have to take him out. And so I was riding so high when it was, what, 4-0 in the first inning? They get up to, 4-0 in the Padres in the first inning. I was riding high, but I was also sitting there going, like, Clevinger could absolutely blow this. And I thought it would take him 3 or 4 innings to blow it. He didn't even get a fucking out, man. He didn't even get an out. And like, there was moments where I know Manaea's line is terrible, and overall that was a terrible performance by Sean Manaea, but there was moments where Sean Manaea looked good, like pitches and at bats where Sean Manaea looked good, especially when he came back out for that second inning. I thought that first at bat, I'm like, okay, he's finding his groove. He's getting his confidence. He looks better. There was none of that from Mike Clevinger, none whatsoever. And I'm sure, you know, Tevin's waiting to speak. He'll speak in a minute here. I'm sure he and other people will bash AJ Preller for not having a fourth great starter ready to go for the playoffs and specifically this series. But yeah, at the end of the day, it's like, did Bob Melvin make a mistake starting Mike Clevinger? Probably. His other option that he kind of got forced into was leaving Sean Manaea in for a while, because you can't blow through every single bullpen arm you have, especially when you don't know if this is going to turn into an extra inning game. There's no ghost runners, all that stuff. I don't know that Bob Melvin made the right move as far as the starter, but I don't know what other option he had with Sean Manaea. Like, I know once he's getting hit, you got to pull him out quickly, but like, people were blaming him for bringing in Sean Manaea at all, and I'm like, you had to. If anything, the decision to kind of quickly move on from Clevinger, get Nick Martinez in, and get 3 solid innings from Nick Martinez was kind of a special one. But the Phillies are just relentless offensively, and I don't really know what the Padres can do about that if their starting pitcher is not out there and on his game, right? It just fucks up the whole thing.
I mean, bullpen games are a thing. They're a thing that work in the playoffs. That's why we were all excited about it last year and the year before. That's why people were excited.
I was terrified of them. I hate bullpen
During the regular season, they work in the playoffs. Like statistically, they've been shown to be an effective. I mean, we got 6.2 innings with 2 runs given up from our bullpen, and we didn't use our 2 best bullpen pitchers. So we did a bullpen game anyways. All we did was use our starters at the exact wrong time, i.e. the top of the lineup. And then also we got 1.1 innings out of Clevinger and Manaea. Like, if you want to get those 1.1 innings, at least like last worst case scenario, make it against the bottom of the order, right? That's like obvious. We did neither. We made
1.1 innings and 8 earned runs.
Yeah, 8 runs. How can you possibly? Like, they have to face 3 batters.
Not just 8 runs, 8 earned runs. It's not even like they got, like, there was bad defense, someone screwed him. No, 8 earned runs and 1.1 innings. Oh my God.
Like, it would have been really dumb if we let Manaea and Clevinger both give up 3 runs each against the bottom of the lineup. That would have been like, oh, that was a bad, poor decision. We made a worse decision. We had them face the top of the order twice, both of them face the top of the order while having no stuff, and we use our whole bullpen, and we gave up 8 runs like really early on. Like, it just the cascade of poor decisions. I don't know, that it's, there's so many like logical decisions that you could have made before you got to the one that we made. And backing your players is cool and stuff. I feel like Clevinger and Manaea are good enough clubhouse guys to be like, okay, I'll at least start against the 6th hitter in your lineup, where the WABA of those guys are just like falls off a cliff. Like, just right. I don't know. It's pretty obvious it was a poor decision, and that's the part that frustrates me. Baseball is a weird game. Balls bounce a weird way, but you make that poor of a decision in a 2-1 deficit in the NLCS. Like, there's no excuses anymore. You're not allowed to say like, oh, we're saving them for the playoffs. We're saving them for an important game in the playoffs. This was an important game in the playoffs, and we made the poorest decision we could have possibly made.
And, you know, it doesn't even really matter that he backed his guy, because Mike Clevinger's not going to be here next year. Like, that doesn't... It doesn't...
Neither will.
Neither will. It doesn't really benefit Bob Melvin next year to be like, I stood by you, Clev, when he's pitching for the, you know, Seattle Mariners or someone. So... Yeah, it wouldn't have. I don't think it would have hurt him that much if he had done something else there. John, before I let you go, I'm basing this off a website, not my own personal math, but you want to take a crack at what the ERA would be for someone giving up 8 earned runs in 1 1/3 innings pitched?
Just 8 times 9 minus a little, so like 62, 63, something like that.
You're hilariously close. It's 65.45. Your math is really good. Thank you for proving once again that you're very smart. I'm gonna kick you on and bring on someone who is smart in a different way, and I'm sure is coming on here like a house on fire. Tevin, did you follow the rules? Did you watch the game at your mother-in-law's house or wherever you needed to watch it to make sure that the
Padres
won?
But the juju seems to have disappeared.
Damn shame. How are you, my friend? I imagine very fired up.
I'm just upset. I'm bummed, man. I mean, Pakoda and I had a DM. We were messaging between each other outside of the watch channel and stuff. So he pretty much said all the sort of points that I would make. I would back the only thing, like, it was just indefensible. Like he said, like, you can't predict. You know, you give up a lot of flares, like, you, baseball's an unpredictable game, like he said. But we put ourselves in a bad, like, we just made indefensible decisions, ultimately. And I think the only thing to add to what John said was, you and Craig had kind of, on your last pod, you guys made an astute point, which was, you know, comparing how the Padres team organization is sort of managed versus the Dodgers, and the Dodgers are very systematic and sort of analytical to the nth degree, and that they build a system and the Padres build players, which I think is a good point. I thinking about it, I was like, you know, now we're seeing that there are limitations to this extreme, you know, and like, as John kind of walked the blow by blow on like why it was just logically not the right decision to use Clevinger and Manaea in the way we did, you know, the thing it occurs to me is like, it wasn't logic based. I think it was really emotional. And like, even interviewed Melvin and he was like, oh, I feel really bad for Clevinger. And it's like, you know, he's not their life coach. That's not his job, isn't to sort of pull for them and give them the best chance for them personally. And he wanted it. He wants it so bad for each guy that he's an amazing motivator. And, you know, it's hard. You can't pick and choose. Oh, this guy's good at this, so let's take this, but also kind of take other things. You kind of have to take people as like a mixed bag. And Melvin has a lot of great strengths, but like the flip side of it is, because he's such a player's manager, like he'll oftentimes make decisions, I think, emotionally. And, you know, relying on Clevin and Mania in any way today is just like an emotional decision. And it's a bummer, but I think that's kind of my read of it. And it's like, I don't think there's anything to be done about it other than, you know, this is kind of the manager we have.
I want to go back for a second, because you said it can't be anything but an emotional decision, right? But like, they have to decide on what their roster is going to be for this series before the series begins. And so in that way, they kind of have to decide before the series even begins, is our fourth starter Mike Clevinger? Is it Sean Manaea? Is it bullpen day so we get another arm in the bullpen or two more arms in the bullpen and those guys don't make the roster? Like, they made a decision that Clevinger and or Manaea was going to be good enough as a game four starter without knowing that they were going to be down 2-1 heading into game four, which puts them in a much different position, a much more desperate position, and the type of position where they can't rely on Mike Clevinger to be good, but they were forced into that position. So like, I would argue that it actually wasn't an emotional decision. If it was an emotional decision, I feel like maybe it would have gone the other way. But I think heading into the season, they had to make the analytical decision of, you know, do we think that Clevinger or Manaea or some mix of the two is going to be good enough for game four? And at the time, you're riding high off the Dodger thing. You're the favorites going into the Philly series. You're not thinking that you're going to be in a really bad spot if you know, Clevinger or Manaea has to pitch in game four. Sorry, my daughter has now snuck into my room. So, hi, sweetie. What's up? Okay, go tell Mama. I'm busy right now. So I wish I only left that in. I only did that because I got so many people messaging me the last time that happened. They were like, that was a nice little break in like an otherwise very sad and terrible podcast. So it works out well tonight too. But yeah, no, like I want to agree with you, but I feel like this is a decision that they made a week ago, and I don't think that they totally understood, I guess, the situation that they could be in, that they ended up being in after a couple games. Does that make sense?
No, it does, but in some ways that's like worse. That's like, in some ways it's like saying they didn't realize the gravity of the situation or how really bad those guys are, which maybe like, because they've been bad for a long time.
Well, so like, I read on, I think it was AC's like newsletter this morning, that this was like kind of the longest break that Clevinger had between starts in a while. And as such, like his knee was feeling better and stronger than it had in months and all this stuff. So like, it makes sense in my head that they were like, oh, with that long of a break, Clevinger's going to feel great and he's going to be able to pitch kind of like, you know, closer to what he did early on coming back from injury than he did at the end of the season or against the Dodgers where he looked like absolute shit. I also understand, like, my stance and Craig's stance heading into this game was Manaea should have been the starter. So like, I can't sit here and be like, oh, I wouldn't have put Manaea on the roster either. So I don't know, like it's such a complicated and weird decision. I don't really think bullpen day was a choice. If you're going to have Clevinger and Manaea on the roster, I'm pretty sure it's not a choice you can make without kind of just screwing your whole team dynamic. So I don't know. It kind of is what it is at this point, I think.
It is. And I'll get off the stage and I'll give someone else a chance, time to speak. The last thing I'll say is like, it was going to be, it was a bullpen game and we didn't use Hader, Suarez, or Pierce Johnson. It's just
Yeah.
Not like the guys came out and they put up a four spot. Like, the team responded so well in kind of a must-win game, and it just didn't feel like we, Melvin put it, you know, we were, the guys were put in the best position to succeed. That's, I think, the frustration that so many of us have, you know?
Yeah, and I do think that the hitters were put in a good position to succeed. And I think them taking a 4-0 lead early is kind of some proof of that. Them taking a 6-4 lead in the middle of the game is some proof of that. I find it funny. I really like these win probability charts because they kind of remind you of how you felt during parts of the game. But in the bottom of the first inning, before Clevinger, or I guess the top of the first inning, in the middle of the first inning, the Padres' chances of winning were already at 82.5%. When Soto hit the 2-run home run to take the 6-4 lead, basically until the Phillies tied it, the Padres' win probability was up to around like 75%. And at that point, it definitely was a bullpen game, and it should have been won. The issue there was both Sean Manaea and Luis Garcia not being totally sharp, and Steven Wilson once again looking like he was more likely to shoot himself on national TV than have the type of dominant relief pitching performance that we've seen from him several times this season. So, look, this is the first time we can say this all year. The Padres' offense tonight was great. Juan Soto was not all the Juan Soto things, but he got a clutch 2-run home run when they needed it. Manny Machado was not incredible, but he was good, and he was good enough. Profar was fine as a leadoff hitter. He got on 2 times out of 5. Josh Bell missed his opportunity to be a hero with 2 men on in the, I want to say, 8th inning, maybe 7th inning. Jake Cronenworth had a rough night. It's not really his fault. That ball that bounced off the second base bag and kind of screwed him up and scored a run was just a sign of how things are going for the Phillies these days. Like I said it earlier, I don't want to claim luck because I don't want to piss on what the Phillies are doing. The Phillies have a great lineup. They're fielding their asses off. I mean, they really, for a team that we came into the series saying their defense sucks, they have been playing really good defense, kind of across the board, offensively, infield. I mean, you know, Real Muto's a beast. But they've also just been getting a lot of, you know, good bounces, balls hit right at players. There was the one Soto line drive that, you know, that they were shifted over to the right side of the infield. The third baseman's kind of sitting where the shortstop is, and Soto hits a ground ball right at him. And then the next at bat, Machado does the same thing, and it gets through the hole and gets into the outfield. So the Phillies just kind of have dumb luck on their side right now. It helps that their fans are crazy. It helps that they kind of are becoming that team of destiny, and they really believe in themselves as a result. Just not a lot you can do when you're facing a team like this. Like, I think Procota kind of nailed it. Like, sometimes you just run into a team that's really hot. There's not a lot you can do, and it's very frustrating. Anyway, I have more people that I want to talk to. You guys are probably already a little tired of hearing from me. Cloud Surfer, how you feeling after this one?
Well, I couldn't watch the game because my stream didn't have Fox on it, but listening to it and just watching the game day and the watch party, it was pretty frustrating. It seems like Melvin has gotten away throughout these playoffs with hanging on to his guys too long, whether it was, you know, he lost game 2 against the Mets, but that was, you know, leaving more hone in, or leaving Darvish in when on game 2 when we actually won against the Dodgers. And I don't know, it's not the only time he's done this. I think back to the Hader game where he had like 35 pitches, and you know, it's kind of understandable during the regular season or even once or twice during the playoffs, but you know, the Phillies manager played to win yesterday's game, and he went all out and he used his best guys for multiple innings, and he said, I don't care about tomorrow, we're gonna win this one today. And I
yeah, he had to close out tonight's game with Zach Eflin and which is such a dangerous proposition. But when you're up four runs, it works out for you. But you're right. He went all out to win yesterday's game. And Bob Melvin has really not gone all out to win any of these games yet. He has not shown, you know, I had been told from, you know, people that were baseball fans before me, that one of the reasons Bobby Cox and the Atlanta Braves won so many division titles and not as many World Series was because Bobby Cox tended to manage in the postseason the same way he did in the regular season. And that oftentimes he would kind of miss out on the urgency needed in situations like these. And it's possible that Bob Melvin falls into that category as well. I really thought that once we got to the playoffs, the whole Bob leaves pitchers in too long thing was going to go away because all the best managers have a quick hook in the playoffs, and it has not at all. Bob Melvin is arguably managing very similar in the postseason as he did in the regular season, with the possible difference being a game like tonight when they might have just rolled over, you know, thrown some position players out at pitcher and called it a night, but maybe not. It was close enough at the end there. But yeah, I think you're right. It's Bob is getting outmanaged in this series is probably a little too strong of a term. But as far as which manager is giving his team more of an advantage in this series, it's probably not Bob Melvin.
Yeah, it was good to see you know, Soto homer and us put up six runs, but I think we have a much better pitching staff than what we saw tonight. So, but anyways, hopefully we win tomorrow, and hope we get another chance at San Diego.
Me too. As someone who has plans of to go to Game Six, I headed into, you know, this part of this series going like they just have to win one in Philadelphia, and then when they lost last night, I'm like, well, it's the first home game for the Phillies in the NLCS. Crowd's crazy. That's a hard one to win. Tonight they just didn't have it, you know, and the magic of Grisham and Nola at the bottom of the lineup has completely gone away. Trent Grisham, I think, is hitting zero in this series that we're four games into. I don't think he has a hit yet. Austin Nola, who was a hero against the Mets and hero against the Dodgers, I believe is hitting 0.67 in this series, which is not good. So those guys have turned into gigantic zeros at the end of the lineup, and it really hurts. And I wanted to clarify something. We had a little conversation on the Discord earlier today. I keep quoting a stat as men left on base, and people noticed that the number I was quoting was very high. That's because I'm looking at these numbers on a per at bat situation. So, you know, if someone comes up with bases loaded, nobody out, and then the next guy comes up, bases loaded, one out, and then the next guy comes up, bases loaded, two out, and the next guy comes up and those are just three guys. That would be nine men left on base because it's three opportunities for each hitter to knock a guy in. But the Padres did not have a lot of guys on base for their hitters tonight. And two of the times batters came up for the Padres with men on base, it was Trent Grisham, who's giving them really nothing now. It's really hurting the offense as much as he might help the defense. Craig Elston, I did not expect to see you here, my friend. How are you?
I'm okay, buddy. Can you hear me just fine?
I can. You sound like you're probably recording on your phone in your car, but otherwise I can hear you crisp and clear.
So I'm recording on the phone in my car.
Nailed it. I'm a professional, Craig.
That is exactly 100% correct. And furthermore, I kind of had no choice in that matter because over the course of a very long dinner, my phone got down to 3%. So I wasn't going to be doing anything. So I had to get in my car because this is actually the only place I have a charging cable on this particular trip. So now I'm Jerry Westing it, using the car to charge my phone. And I thought this would be the perfect time to also get away from the family domicile and talk just a little bit of Padres Game 5. I saw every piece of this game that was relevant, including Josh Bell's strikeout as the potential tying run. So I feel like I can still discuss the game. But I'm guessing by this point of the show, you have covered all the major and obvious storylines that have been dominating both the Discord and Twitter.
I don't know. I would hope so. One person that I really thought halfway through this game we were going to be talking about a lot in the post game, and I've barely mentioned it all, is Nick Martinez. Who?
Thank you. Yes.
I mean, he threw 43 pitches. He threw three scoreless innings. He came in after Mike Clevinger got absolutely bombed and put up his best performance of the season, I feel like. Like that was an incredible pitching performance from Nick Martinez. And really the only good pitching performance that the Padres got all night. Like, Adrian Monahan was fine at the end, but he was a little shaky too. Nick Martinez was basically the only guy wearing a Padres uniform throwing at Citizens Bank Park who looked good tonight, I feel like.
Yeah, I remember our preview for the LCS podcast when your good buddy, the co-host, said that should be the starting pitcher for Game 4. I think I said the same thing last night. And, you know, obviously Bob Melvin is going to be given the horns for this game. And it's 100 billion% deserved. Okay? Bob Melvin did not manage the pitching staff in a winning fashion today at all. Now, he did one thing right. He got Mike Clevinger out of there after four batters. It was four batters too late, unfortunately, which was the joke I made on Twitter. Clevinger was fine. He just got taken out four batters too late. Mike Clevinger never should have started this game. And you and I knew that last night, the second we saw it on Twitter. We both said, this is unfortunate. And the way to do it was to start Nick Martinez and bring in Sean Manaea. And that's exactly what they did. And the only thing is, Bob had to take a three-run penalty to do the right strategy by putting in Mike Clevinger, who will never pitch for the Padres again. Actually, I fucking hope he does, because that means he's pitching Game 4 of the World Series, right? So I hope he does pitch again for the Padres, but I don't think he's going to get an out for the Padres. He's washed. And Manaea was terrible, and that's pretty damn predictable, to be honest. But after he gave up the tie, Manaea got out of that inning at 4-4. That was the end of the fourth, right?
Yes.
Top of the fifth inning, Juan Soto does the thing that everyone's been waiting for. And boy, did he do it. Dramatic home run. Juan Soto keeps getting big hits in the playoffs for the Padres. Does he get it every time? No. Do people expect him to get one every time? Yes. And he gets a massive hit. And it's 6-4. And everything that's happened at Citizens Bank Park to that moment has been undone. You know, the Padres had a 4-0 lead. It was erased in the span of 5 minutes. The entire ballpark went insane, you know, and now it's back undone. And when I saw Manaea go back out on the mound for the bottom of the fifth, I thought to myself, what are we doing here? What are we doing here with the top of the order coming up? I believe it was 9-1-2 coming up. What are we doing here? Oh, you want Manaea to face the nine hitter? Okay. Well, he got him out. All right. Well, now you're facing Schwarber. Great. Maybe this is going to be an easy inning. Well, Schwarber got on base. You're done. You're done. This guy's got to be out, and there has to have been a plan other than this. It should have been Luis Garcia with a clean inning to start the fifth inning. I know he gave up a homer later in the game after the bag had already been dropped and the crowd had already had their heads explode. But a clean inning there is all the difference in the world. The Padres lost this game because they had two offensive explosions, and within three batters, the Phillies had all but erased it both times in the bottom half of the inning. And we knew, John, that at some point, and we knew it would be the National League Championship Series. I remember us having this conversation, and I think it ending with, well, wouldn't it be great if we got there and had that problem, right? And here it was, the problem game. What are you going to do? And the answer was, you had to go to a fresh and ready bullpen. This was the must-win game. And I agree with what I heard Cloud Surfer say as I was pulling up here. I really feel like Bob Melvin tonight made the mistake that was made previously by Buck Showalter and Dave Roberts, managing for a game he's never going to get to. He's worried about what Game 6 and Game 7 look like for the San Diego Padres, specifically Game 7, when he's got a short rest Joe Musgrove. And guess what? Odds are now we're never going to get there. We're going to have to beat Zach Wheeler and Aaron Nola consecutively now to get to a Game 7. So what that, you know, that decision maybe cost the Padres the game, maybe cost the Padres the series. Does that make Bob Melvin a bad manager? Of course not. I can be equally mad at him and think we've got the best man for the job. But he blew it tonight, I think. And you know, that and a great offensive performance in a good hitter's park and the Phillies being on fucking fire is what I take away from this.
Yeah. Everything you said is right. And I'm sitting here going like, you absolutely can't do a bullpen game in this situation. Blah, blah, blah. I hate bullpen games. You know what the Phillies did? They did a fucking bullpen game. Yeah. And like Bailey faltered. And it didn't really matter because their offense is that good. And Brad Hand was not great, but it didn't really matter because their offense is that good. And none of their bad pitchers got left in too long. And like, you know, to your point, Clevinger got left in four batters too long. Sean Manaea probably got left in about two or three batters too long as well. Because they were trying to get, I could see the idea was we got three innings out of Nick Martinez. If we can get three innings out of Sean Manaea, which makes sense, you should be able to get three innings out of Sean Manaea. Then you go into the back of your bullpen. You go into Garcia, into Suarez, into Hader, and you're unbeatable. And you know they had that 6-4 lead. I could see that plan coming together, but you know the best laid plans of mice and men. There's a few more people waiting here that I want to get in and talk to, and then I kind of want to be done with this. I want to flush this game and I want to move on because this game doesn't matter anymore. There's three games ahead that the Padres have to win all of them. And Mike Clevinger and Sean Manaea will not pitch in any of them. Mike Clevinger and Sean Manaea, to your point, Craig, you said like, oh, maybe we do want Clevinger to pitch again because that means he's pitching game four of the World Series. No, if Mike Clevinger's pitching game four of the World Series, I'm going to be fucking pissed off because he's shown that that's a bad idea. But right now, Mike Clevinger and Sean Manaea do not matter at all. What matters is if this San Diego Padres team with their three best pitchers can somehow find a way to beat the Philadelphia Phillies three games in a row. So I want to get through some of these people that have been waiting on hold and then just flush this game and move on.
Absolutely. I'll put a rousing capstone to it once we're done. I promise. Okay.
Sounds good. Dean, my man.
Hey, guys.
How you doing?
Oh, just splendid. You know?
Yeah.
How are you guys doing?
I'm good. You know, I enjoyed a day off. I enjoyed some beverages during the game. I'm trying to maintain a healthy perspective, so I'm okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I hear that. You know, I was trying to keep that, you know, kind of all day, really since last night, since Clevinger was announced, you know, just hoping, you know, hoping that there was, you know, baseball, as far as Tevin was saying, you know, about that being an emotional calculation or putting Manaea in as an emotional calculation, but it's like baseball is emotional. And it's not just about numbers and it's about calling on people and having them answer the bell. You know, I didn't love the idea of Clevinger going out there. There was, you know, he had one start in Philly you know, earlier this year where, you know, pitched pretty well, got the win. I think no runs or one run earned or whatever. So, I mean, there was some precedent even for him having success, you know, and whereas he just was not good against the Dodgers. So, you know, I'm just going into the game, just hoping that, you know, that because he's being called upon, that, you know, he rises to the occasion. Like so many have throughout this postseason. I think that's kind of been Bob Melvin's strong suit. It was a weakness today, but, you know, all postseason long, he's been calling upon people that we wrote off a month ago, you know, whether it's Grisham and Bell and Drury and things like that. And I think that was a huge reason why we succeeded against the Dodgers in the, you know, that was basically, you know, a contest between, you know, being emotionless and calculated, pulling people out just because the numbers say so, versus, you know, emotion and human spirit where we won out. I think the Phillies also have that too, though, you know, so I'm trying not to be bummed. At the beginning of the season, before the season, when we found out about Tatis, you know, a lot of people, not myself, but a lot of people had basically written off the season already. You know, the whole narrative up until the trade deadline was if we could just hold 500. Well, we did, you know, we're better than 10 games over 500, basically the whole year. When we got to the trade deadline, when we got to when Tatis was supposed to come back and that didn't happen, we all know the story there. This was a team that was not supposed to really go this far deep. Even once they got in, there was no reason for this team to go as deep as they have so far. And so if the narrative is playing on house money, you know, then you can't be angry if we lose. You know, we can't sit here and nitpick things. I mean, Bob Melvin's really done a ton of things right. I mean, man, sure. He's had the pitching staff healthy all year long. He's had them lined up to succeed every game so far up until this point. Absolutely. In the postseason.
Absolutely.
At some point, Clevenger's going to have to pitch.
No,
yeah.
No, you're right. That's the key. And I was trying to say that kind of at the end of my comment too. Like, you can still love Bob Melvin and be mad at him for this game. You know, it's okay to be mad at the way he managed this game. Like, to really even be a little bit butthurt about it. Like, you know, there was a different path for this game, potentially. Maybe the Phillies were going to hang a 10 spot today, no matter what. Maybe this was final destination for game four, no matter what. And Robert Suarez would have given up 5 runs instead. You know, I don't know that to be true. But I also know there's a different version of this where Robert Suarez is the next pitcher in after Nick Martinez. Just to absolutely make sure. Like, what, or after Manaea, I mean. It's 6-4, boom. We're going to now throw the 9-1-2 is coming up. Suarez is going all the way through Harper. And now we'll figure out the next time through. That might be Hader. You know, and that's a way to kill the momentum of that game. He didn't do it. But Bob Melvin's been tremendous all year, and it's great, and I think, John, encouraging to know that tonight Bob Melvin's the right manager to have too, because tonight is a night that he's going to keep this team focused and fired up and not be pissed off. He gave the ball, just like you said, Dean, to some guys in the clubhouse who have been there all year long. Those guys didn't come through. Those guys are going to have their heads down today.
I just want to bring up a point because Dean mentioned this, and I have seen several people say this on Twitter. I think I've seen people say this on our Discord as well. Of, well, you know, Clevenger had a good start against the Phillies earlier this year, so, you know, there was reason to believe that, you know, he was going to have a good start against the Phillies.
Yeah, no, there wasn't.
His good start against the Phillies was May 17th. It yeah. is October 22nd. It has been, 5 months? It has been 5 months. And over those 5 months, a fucking idiot would have seen that whatever Mike Clevenger had in the gas tank completely disappeared once we got to September, because here's what he did in September, start by start. 3 innings, 5 earned runs. 5 innings, 4 earned runs. 5 innings, 6 earned runs. 5 innings, 0 earned runs against the St. Louis Cardinals. That's surprising. And then 4 innings, 5 earned runs against the Colorado Rockies, not to mention how shitty he looked against the Dodgers last week. So anyone with half a fucking brain would understand that the pitcher Mike Clevinger was on May 17th of this year is not the pitcher he is on October 22nd. And whatever medical marvel he is coming back from a second Tommy John surgery and looking like an effective pitcher ran out months ago, probably due to stamina and just general, you know, in the general stamina, in shapeness, athleticness that you don't have after not playing this game for an entire year. And it's been obvious that he's been out of gas for a month and yet hasn't skipped a start the same way that Sean Manaea did. So I take issue with anyone trying to defend Bob Melvin with the Mike Clevinger had a good start against this team on May 17th. You know what else happened on May 17th? Bryce Harper didn't fucking play against the San Diego Padres. And Bryce Harper is the best player on the Philadelphia Phillies by a mile. Also, Kyle Schwarber went 0-for-4 with 4 strikeouts in that game. That's a different Kyle Schwarber than the guy we saw today. Reese Hoskins went 0-for-4 with 2 strikeouts. That's a different Reese Hoskins than what we saw today. 5 months is an eternity in this stupid sport. So there was no good reason to start Mike Clevinger in this game.
There was none.
I'm not saying Bob Melvin is a bad manager. He definitely made a bad call. He didn't have a lot of good options, but he had to know that the chances of Mike Clevinger having a good outing against the Philadelphia Phillies was slim to none. Anyway, I've talked enough. Well, this guy waited for his chance to speak. Family, PH family, how are you doing? I'm sorry. The last time I tried to call you up, it seemed like we had technical difficulties. I'm glad you got back on. How are you?
I'm good. No problem. Thanks. We say this a lot when we win, so I'll say it when we lose. I want to thank you both for the community you created. It's really great to be with a bunch of Padre friends and talk about our team because we all care. I don't want to litigate the game too much because I agree with basically what everyone has said. But if there's 3 guys I want to start with their backs against the walls and no one believes we have a chance, it's Darvish, Snell at home, and Musgrove in an elimination game. And that's all I got. And I'll take whatever you want to say off air. Thanks. Bye.
Yeah,
it's a great point. Family. It's an absolutely great point. But you know, at this point going forward, it's, you know, you got to win 3 games without making a single mistake and playing your best baseball every game because the Phillies are hot. You're going to have to play your best baseball to beat them, I think.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to be very, in a way, cliched, but I truly, truly, truly believe this. So, they do not have 3 games, okay? And you can't look at it that way. And it was looking at it that way that cost us today. You have 1 game. Your season is 1 game. It's tomorrow. You have this game tomorrow. And that's what I was going to say. Like, that's the one thing I know for sure. The Padres play baseball tomorrow, unless it rains, which it very well might. But the Padres have a game left on the schedule. If they win that game, their prize is another game. And that's how it goes for the next potentially 3 days, but that's how it goes tomorrow. So everything Bob Melvin hasn't done until now, he gets the chance to do tomorrow. And Yu Darvish has a chance to pitch his team back to San Diego. If he does, Monday night, you and I get a chance to go to an NLCS game. And when we do, we get a chance to cheer the team and maybe they win that game. But it's all tomorrow. There's a game tomorrow. I'm psyched. Tomorrow's October 23rd. I love that you just brought up that date. We have been Padres hot tubbing it nonstop for 8 months, 7-8 months. And there's a game tomorrow. So that's amazing. And I hope the Padres feel that excitement that they have a game tomorrow and they have a chance to win it. They have a chance to spoil Philly's day, spoil the national narrative. Let's go do it.
You know, I'm really glad that you described what we do here as hot tubbing, because I'm going to have to do my taxes at some point in the next couple of months. And there's definitely going to be some income, and they're going to need me to define what my job is that has led to that income. And I'm definitely going to say, I'm just hot tubbing it.
I'm hot tubbing.
Absolutely hot tubbing.
People pay us to hot tub.
Craig, look who's joining us. It's your favorite guy in the whole world.
Oh, yeah.
Get excited. Oh. Friar Goose.
Hey, amigos. Amigos. How you guys doing?
We're alive. Still, somehow.
I know.
Un día muy largo, amigo. Un día muy largo.
Yeah, and you know, and it's been said, you know, I don't want to rehash anything that's already been said. You know, given the circumstances, great session today, great post-game show. People said it all. I mean, I really want like the sense that the Dean said about playing with house money. That's how I feel, you know. The gratitude, like you said, Craig, the gratitude of being at this point in the season, you know, backs to the wall, yes. Not a great situation to go into in Philadelphia, you know, against that crowd and that situation. But man, I'm excited about watching the game tomorrow. Very pumped to even be there in that situation. And yeah, you know, Bo Mel, you know, the decisions he made 100% affected the way this game went. He's also made some crazy, you know, questionable decisions in the past that went his way, like with Trent back in September, you know, putting Hader out there in a safe situation. You know, in early September was a boneheaded decision. You know, if you looked at the stats and what the situation was, you know, and it worked out for him, right? Tonight, it did not. He took a few risks, and it did not work out the way we would have liked. Tomorrow's a new day, and I'm feeling good. I'm grateful, guys, grateful that we have Padres baseball at the end of October. And, you know, there's a path until the fat lady sings. I'm in it to win it. Thanks, guys. Good night.
Good night, Goose. Good stuff, man.
Good night, Goose. I hate to end on I hate to end on a negative note.
Title of tomorrow's podcast.
I hate to end on a negative note, but he brought up something that I feel like I need to address here because it's become blatantly obvious. Trent Grisham this season has had a different stance and a slightly different swing. He's more crouched down than he used to be. He used to be almost standing straight up as the pitch came to him. When we got to the postseason and he was, you know, still a 180 something hitter who hadn't gotten a hit in like a month, he went back to the old stance. All of a sudden he started standing straight up and he had a lot of success going back to his old swing, his old comfortable swing against the Mets and against the Dodgers and against the Phillies. It has answered an important question for me that I've had all year long, which is why the fuck did Trent Grisham change his swing? It has become painfully, painfully apparent that when he stands straight up in the batter's box, even if he tries to crouch down as the ball is coming into him, he cannot get to a down and in strike. If you can hit that down and in corner of the strike zone, he cannot touch it. Fastball, slider, changeup, it doesn't matter. Down and in, he cannot get to. And the Phillies have figured it out, and they are just pounding him down and in, and there's nothing he can do about it. And now that I'm seeing that, I'm a little bit thankful. I'm obviously rooting for the Padres to win a World Series trophy, but I'm a little bit thankful that we got to see that be exposed again before we started telling ourselves like, oh, maybe Trent Grisham is actually really good and actually he needs to hold down the center field spot going forward and can't be moved off it because now he's both the hitter and the fielder. I'm almost glad that going back to the old swing, it took a few games, but has been kind of exposed again because it just shows you how offensively weak Trent Grisham currently is as a player and why that's a problem going forward. Because, man, him between him and Nola now, it's almost like having a pitcher at the end of your lineup that they can pitch to if they get into any sort of trouble, and just kind of understand that it's, you know, you're not gonna feel damage from them.
So tell me this. This is, I just saw, as you were talking about Grisham, I saw this tweet from AC come as a notification, and I don't even know why it was, but
yeah,
this is a part of the game. This is a part of the game I missed. Trent Grisham hits a ball 100.6 miles per hour off the bat to the wall in right field. Seemed like no one from Grisham to pitcher Noah Syndergaard could believe it did not go out. I didn't see Syndergaard pitch. 5 feet further, it tied the game. Instead, it was the third out in the top of the sixth. So he just missed a game-tying home run?
Yes, but there was three different guys tonight that hit balls specifically to like right field, right center field, where like they hit it and you were like, that's fucking gone. And every single one of them landed in the right field, the right fielder's glove, like 2 feet in front of the wall. Happened to both the Padres and the Phillies. But yes, it did happen to Trent Grisham at some point. Was that the ninth inning? That may have been the ninth inning. Hold on.
No, because Eflin finished the game. I watched the ninth inning.
Top of the ninth, he flew it to left. So it must have been his at bat before that, which would have been right here. Sixth inning. Noah Syndergaard comes in, gets a ground out. Ha-Seong Kim hits a single. This is when the Phillies are up 8-6. Ha-Seong Kim gets a single, and Trent Grisham hits what looks like kind of a bomb to right field and ends up getting caught by the right fielder. It did happen, but it happened to several people tonight. That's why I was actually kind of surprised when Juan Soto's cleared the fence by as much as it did. Because to me, his didn't look like he got all of it. And there was a couple other people like that got all, it looked like they got all of it, and it went nowhere in right field. So, yes, he did at some point make good contact, but he's looking a lot more like the player we saw during the regular season than the guy we've seen during the postseason.
No, absolutely. And actually, that's a piece of information I didn't have, that he did drive a fly ball to the wall. Because otherwise my comment was going to be that the spell was broken and Trent Grisham is broken again, and it's just over. Cause all the other at bats I've seen, the down and in, the fastball at the top of the zone, you know, all of the things that he strikes out, and then getting so geared up for the fastball that somebody throws a change or something outside and he just goes, bah, you know, and has absolutely no chance. Cause he's so geared up. He can't get to the fastball. That's just, that Trent Grisham's batting fatal flaw is that he can't get to big league fastballs. And because of that, he has to cheat or change his stance or lock in and go fastball only in order to get to it. And every once in a while, he guesses right and he smacks one. But most of the time, and especially in a situation like this, you know, he was hot for 2 weeks. 2 weeks is great. It's hard to be hot for a month, you know, and especially for a player like Trent Grisham. So I agree with you. I'm kind of glad to see, for the sake of next year's evaluation, you know, that we know these things. But for the sake of the series, I sure wish he'd run into one tomorrow.
Yeah, me too. Tomorrow is going to be a very interesting game. And I think here's where we can kind of wrap up talking about tonight's game. And tomorrow is going to be a very interesting game. I can almost guarantee we're going to get a good start from Yu Darvish, because this is what he does. Profar is playing well. I didn't even know until I heard the pregame show say that Profar is battling like a toe injury. I didn't even know he's playing well. Did you see the play where he threw out the guy at second base? Because that was an early season Profar fielding highlight that I love to see. So he was good. You know, Soto was good because he hit the 2-run home run. Machado was good, fine.
Was great. Machado made a home run, another base hit, and an incredible play falling into the tarpaulin in a 4-run game in the top of the ninth inning. Give Manny the seat.
No, you're right. You're right. I think I'm just, and it's not his fault. Like, it's arguably Soto's fault, but like, I'm getting really tired of Manny Machado hitting nothing but solo home runs. Like, he comes up in enough situations with men on base, but it always seems like when he hits one, it's either the Padres are way behind or the Padres are way ahead, which is to say, like, they're meaningless. It's not meaningless. He hit a home run when it was 0-0 in the top of the first. Like, that was incredible. That got the team going. He's a big reason why they ended the, you know, the top of the first up 4-0. But it just, for some reason, I want him to come through in those moments when there's a man or two men on base, the team's trailing, and I feel like I haven't seen that in a while, and I'm probably being too hard on him. I'm always too hard on Manny. And it's a common thing that people do, and it's not a racist thing. It's just one of those things where he makes everything look so easy that it's almost hard to believe when he doesn't succeed. It's easy to go like, oh, well, I guess he should have tried harder there or something. But I don't know. Like, the catch was amazing. The catch was absolutely amazing. The home run
have to try that hard. You know what I'm saying? He right. Went all out. Oh, Manny doesn't try. Manny doesn't hustle. Manny's been hustling his ass off this playoff. He had that double.
Yeah, no, he definitely hustles. Yes.
And like the effort he gave there is part of the reason why I still say, you know, like, come on, there's a game tomorrow. I think he desperately wants this. And I think Soto does too. And I agree. I think Darvish is going to pitch a great game tomorrow. The only thing is, I also think Darvish is going to give up at least one home run tomorrow, because that's what the Phillies do.
And that's also what Darvish does. Darvish gives up a solo home run or two per start, right? And that's fine if that happens. But like at the end of the day, the Phillies had a guy in their lineup tonight who had 4 RBIs. Like, it's really hard to win a game when a guy on the other team has 4 RBIs. And the Padres also gave up 6 consecutive runs at the end of this game. Like, they'll get better pitching than what they got tonight from their starter. They'll get better pitching from their bullpen because there'll be no reason not to use Suarez and Hader and all the high leverage guys tomorrow. But yeah, I hope we get more than one RBI from Manny Machado. I hope we get something from that DH spot with Bell has been Bell or Drury has been really frustrating. 2 RBIs from Drury tonight at first base, though. So I don't know. I think I'm just sad. I'm just sad.
That's
and just
it.
Disappointed
that,
because
no, that, that,
because we could it. we could see this team had the potential to do the thing that the Phillies are doing, which is like catch lightning in a bottle. You know, it's magic. You're the team of destiny. It looked like that was happening after they beat the Dodgers. And now it feels like the Phillies have stolen that from the Padres somehow, some way.
No, they did. And you know, that's definitely what I was saying after game one, when I came home sad after game one of this series. I said, this was the one team, and I really meant it. This was the one team I didn't want to play, you know. Any other team I wanted to play, but not the 6th seed that's just won 2 series in a row and is on fire and has Bryce Harper, who's on fire, and has Zach Wheeler, who's incredible, you know, and has a home field advantage that's real in terms of this is a team that will take even a really, really good pitching staff like the Padres and put it under insane pressure because all of these guys know the way to hit home runs. In that little baby ballpark, they hit swings that are fly ball outs elsewhere that are home runs there. And I, you know, it's all of that's come true in terms of Philly is taking advantage of their home field. But yesterday was a winnable game. Today was a winnable game. That's what got me mad was that, it was a winnable game. And the way that we used our pitching staff was like, we had to concede this game in order to win it in 7. And like, I just don't believe that. But, hey, I look at this series right now and I think basically, you know, also what I said after game one is probably what's going to happen. Phillies in 5. That's the most likely probability thing that's going to happen is the Phillies just win tomorrow, take care of home field, and win the series. This series gets back to San Diego. Look out.
Right.
So
yeah, you know, if it comes back to San Diego, there'll be a lot for the Phillies and their fans to worry about. But we gotta win a game in Philly first.
Yeah, I mean, probably we're doing the last post-game show of the season tomorrow. But if we're not, look the fuck out. Yeah. So, you know, that's where I am. And that's, and like Goose, that's why I'm going to just close with gratitude. We've got a game tomorrow. It might be a sad game. It might be our death game. But we've got that game. The Dodgers don't. The Mets don't. We've got it. We've got this chance. And we've got a chance to bring the series back to our park. And that's cool. It's special. Our best pitcher, the number one pick we would make on our staff, is on the mound. And so is theirs. But it's our second time facing him. Let's see if the Padres and Juan Soto and Manny still have something up their sleeve. And I'll tell you what, if we score to 4-6 tomorrow and we lose again, you have to just tip your cap and say the Phillies were that team of destiny, and we are not. Because if you tell me right now Padres get 4-6, like they had 4 in the first and 6 at the end today, I think we're going to win that game. So let's see what happens. Let's go, Padres.
Let's go, Padres. Talk to you folks tomorrow evening after that game. Hopefully it's a happy one.
See y'all.